Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. I'm your host, Noise Era, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer, and I have titled this episode, Makeshift Mankind, Technocratic Influences, and Games of the Elites. Why? Because if you look all around us, all you can see is the fingerprints of chaos. We're talking about things such as transhumanism, water-breathing super soldiers, a fourth strand of DNA, and how DARPA is working on brain scanning and augmenting reality. We for sure live in some interesting times, and I want to say, guys, ladies, and gentlemen, really, it is mind-blowing, even being able to report on these types of things, given the current climate, given the current conditions. But before we get into everything, I wanted to give a brief apology for, you know, taking the extra week on my hiatus. The time that I've spent with family was definitely needed. You know, you take a step back from this and you really see you're affecting this many people's lives. The research that I thought I was doing for myself, you know, it turns out there's people that are actually paying attention. And I'm just so humbled and so grateful and so appreciative to be in this position. But I didn't want to make this into a huge old love fest. So with that being said, make sure you're checking out the website, factionsoffreedom.jimdo.com. And once you're there, get lost in all the content. So with that being said, let's jump right into it. Most righteous, and thank you guys for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. Wow, do we have a information-packed episode for you guys today. It's not really going to do justice trying to make up for the 2 weeks that we kind of went on a brief hiatus, but we will be going over some of the continuing themes that we see resurging. We haven't really done an episode kind of like this where we've really gone into kind of depths about things like transhumanism, the technocracy, the New World Order, and things of this nature. But that's exactly what we're going to be doing in this episode. I have so many different things planned for you guys, you know, looking at human animal organs. You know, just the other week, maybe even a few months ago, we were talking about how they were trying to clone monkeys. Today, we're talking about things such as synthetic immortality, how they have pig brains outside of the body. But one of the, and I think this would be a great way for us to lead into discussing all this transhumanism stuff, one of the more influential quotes or statements that I've ever heard in relation to transhumanism, genetically modified soldiers, things like the super soldier program, superhumans, and everything of this nature, is whenever I heard General Mark Milley talking about how we have to prepare for terrorists, hybrid armies, and little green men. Let's take a listen.
The world of 1916 was complex. Well, the world of 1945 was complex. The world of 2016 is intensely complex. And I can tell you that from personal experience, and I know there's many others who can tell you that as well. And you will graduate and be in that world. And you're going to be leading the soldiers and the sailors, the airmen and the Marines in that world. You'll be dealing with terrorists. You'll be dealing with hybrid armies. You'll be dealing with little green men. You're going to be dealing with tribes. You'll be dealing with national leaders and local leaders. You'll be dealing with politics and economics. And you'll be dealing with direct fire and indirect fire. And you're going to be dealing with it all. And it's all going to be dealt with simultaneously. And for that, you're going to have to be ready. And that's why
readiness, in my mind, is number one. And definitely go, if you haven't, definitely go listen to that speech. You know, it was, ironically enough, it was almost 2 years ago that he gave this statement on April 21st at the 100th anniversary of the JROTC Centennial Symposium in Northfield, Vermont. And as you heard him there talking about things like terrorists, hybrid armies, and little green men, that was 2 years ago. That was a groundbreaking statement 2 years ago. What are we talking about today? We have terrorists. We have hybrid armies. Now, this is what could be considered little green men. By doing some more digging into this, apparently this is a term that they use for Russians, but these days, you know, they kind of use Russians for everything. But whenever I hear a general coming out talking about hybrid armies and little green men, I obviously think of things such as extraterrestrials, hybrid humans, transhumans, genetically modified soldiers, and things of this nature. Because remember, it was just a year ago or so that we heard about how Putin warned of just that, superhumans, saying how we're not really prepared for what that's going to do. It's going to open up the Pandora's box of insanity. Stuff like epigenetics, eugenics, DNA, and we'll get into some of this stuff as later. You know, apparently they found a fourth strand of DNA in us, and I think that speaks volumes to a number of things that we are able to do, you know, that humanity is able to do, and that we're able to interact with. But I also want to play for you guys a quick clip where we have the Syrian ambassador Bashar Jafari talking about genetically modified Syrian opposition. Let's take a listen.
Some member states and the Security Council and the mainstream media continue to defend and support the genetically modified armed Syrian opposition, moderate.
Ambassador, you named off a whole list of individuals who you claim are
nice people, yeah,
are intelligence agents from
countries. No, they are Syrian moderate opposition.
Right.
Genetically modified.
Are they still in eastern Aleppo?
Yes.
They are still there.
Yes.
I think that's hilarious. The lady somehow missed the question that you have a Syrian ambassador talking about how there are genetically modified soldiers in Aleppo. And she's just going off the rails asking something else. You know, what we're missing right now is a slow, subtle disclosure of what their intentions are, of what they're trying to do. Why would they benefit from being able to modify us? Why would they benefit from having these kinds of technologies? We've talked time and time again about things such as CRISPR-Cas9, this genome editing technology. These things will advance. They will become more commonplace. They'll be accepted. And then you're going to start seeing all kinds of different modifications, alterations, changes that natural people are doing to transform themselves into something greater. That is the whole crux of the transhuman movement, of the transhumanist agenda. Now, I know I'll have some people, some politically correct individuals who are thinking, oh, you know, why are you talking smack about transgenders or people who feel cisgender or people who feel kind of uncomfortable in their skin. Not talking about that. What I am talking about is how this body dysmorphia, how this behavior modification, this body modification, this alteration, how all of this stuff has been slowly, incrementally put into our day-to-day digest to where we think it's normal. We don't see the social engineering aspect of all of this. I mean, homosexuality, that's been going on for time immemorial. You know, like you can look to things such as Rome, you can look to things such as Greece. I'm not going to say it's normal, and I'm not going to say it's unnatural, but it's definitely something that humanity has a history of. We don't have a history of altering ourselves in this capacity. And when we do, it doesn't necessarily bode well for us. You definitely cannot put the genie back in the bottle if we start messing around with this type of stuff. That's all I'm going to say. But because we live in such a technotronic era, because we live in such a time frame to where people don't care, you know, life is just meaningless these days. That's how people choose to see things. We don't really ever, you know, really digest what's happening to us. We don't see how we're slowly adding to the gradual degradation of society. But to get back to point, back to looking more at this transhumanism, what popped up this week, a day before 420, we heard about how they had human-mouse hybrids, how scientists were growing human brains in tiny rodents. Now again, this is something that we paid attention to on the website and that we've talked about before, where they're growing tiny brains, organoids, many organs and things of this nature. But what we have now is where they're literally putting a human brain inside of a rat. They've done that with pigs as well. Sheep, cows, and this is another crazy thing too, that we don't really understand, that we're not really like taking into consideration when looking at things like human-animal hybrids, animal-human hybrids, the transhuman agenda, and everything else. You know, and we'll get into some of this stuff later on too, with growing things like human organs inside of animals, inside of cows, you know, they basically just see the cows as the gestation chamber. Like, this is where they grow the organs. This is where they grow the tissue. This is where they grow the humanoids. You know, and it's crazy to think about this type of stuff and to talk about it, but this is all being done in the name of science. We are literally mutilating not only animals, but also what could be considered life, human, in the name of this science-based religion, or this religion-based science. But let's get into this. I put this up April 19th, 2018. It's from End Times Headlines by Ricky Scaparo. It says, for the first time ever, miniature human brains have grown in a new species, and scientists have suggested the breakthrough could help with the stem cell research. Scientists created the pin-sized human brains from stem cells and placed them inside the skulls of mice, where a piece of tissue had been removed to make room for the new organ. Of the test, mice, roughly 80% survived the operation, and within 2 weeks, the rodents' implant had been successfully received and were even spawning new neurons. The brain implant survived for an average of 233 days, but began the process of dying much earlier. Lead researcher Fred Gage, a neuroscientist at the Salk Institute, said, quote, "In our hands, the organoids stop growing around 5 weeks. It's a function of size rather than time. We see some cell death even in the edge of the organoids, starting at 10 weeks, which become really dramatic over time. This is an obvious hurdle for a long-time study." Abid Al-Fattah Mansour, a research associate at the Salk Institute, said that was a big accomplishment. "A new technique can harness brain waves to reconstruct mental images. Quote, we saw infiltration of blood cells into the organoid and supplying it with blood, which was exciting because it's perhaps the ticket for organoids, quote, long-term survival. In this exercise, the scientists accomplished three things: installing an organoid into a complex tissue environment, connecting it to the species, and integrating it into the cardiovascular system of the organism. The researchers say that the breakthrough could one day help with repairing organs such as brains from stem cells. The list of real hybrid animals will surprise and amaze you. What does the future hold? And with advances in genetic engineering and cloning? Only time will tell. Keep reading to find out more about these strange creatures." Mr. Mansour added that these three elements are important for both basic research and drug discovery of brain disorders. For example, our approach has the potential for preclinical drug testing and patient-specific derived brain organoids under the organism setup. So there you have it, folks. They're trying to grow organs inside of rats to figure out how that helps us. We are in for something. Talk about a rat. Talk about a rabbit hole. What about a rat hole? Crazy days. But check this out. Let's go a little bit further. Japan has lifted the ban on growing human organs in animals. So not only is the Salk Institute working on putting, you know, tiny human brains, growing them from stem cells, and putting them inside of rats, rodents, we have Japan joining in the fun as well, saying, "Hey, you know what? That's a great idea. Let me see if I can grow some human organs in pigs. It'll be great." I put this up April 16th. It's from the Drudge Report feed. It says a Japanese government-commissioned expert panel has green-lighted controversial scientific experiments to grow human organs inside the bodies of animals as early as this fall. Oh, great. I'm glad they're putting some pep in their step. I can't wait to have an organ straight from a pig. Under the auspices of the Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology Ministry, the panel produced a report on research involving the development of human organs inside the body of pigs and other animals. In the report, the panel concluded it would allow researchers to implant an animal embryo, a fertilized egg, containing human cells into an animal's womb and have the animal give birth. I'm going to pause right there before I continue on. What we're talking about is what I mentioned before I got into these two articles right here, how they are literally using the the bodies of animals as husks or chambers, tubes. You know, we constantly hear about test tube babies. We've talked about things such as ectogenesis, where they literally grow an embryo inside of some kind of chamber. That's what they're doing with animals. Now they're doing it to where they're injecting human embryos inside of animals just to see what happens, just to see what kind of organs can be grown. And I know this sounds wild, but we also have an article up on our website that we'll get into here shortly. But continuing on, it says that one method being considered for growing human organs inside of animal bodies involves injecting human-induced pluripotent stem cells, IPS, into an animal embryo and then returning the embryo to an animal's womb to be birthed. The embryos are genetically modified to prevent specific organs from being created. So they're modifying embryos to stop organs from being grown, but they're still injecting the embryo into into different animals. This is crazy. This is nuts. And don't worry, all this stuff is going to go inside of you. But continuing on, it says Japan's current guidelines prohibit transplanting such an embryo into an animal's womb. The ministry plans to revise them. The panel concluded such research could lead to discovering the underlying causes of disease. Oh, there it is. There was that science tip. This is why we're doing it for science. We're trying to understand diseases. Securing organs to be used for transplants and developing new treatments. Such research is already permitted in the U.S. and the U.K. However, the panel in the same report decided not to allow research that could produce a creature ambiguous enough to blur the line between human and other animals. Crossbreeding of animals born as a result of a method and the fertilization using human germ cells. It also called for the ethics committee of the government, universities, and research institutions to examine the content of the research before deciding whether to conduct such studies. A team led by University of Tokyo professor Hiramitsu Nakauchi has said it will carry out research to create a human pancreas inside of a pig if the ban of the growth of human organs in animals is lifted. So they're going to do it. You know, they're just giving you that gradual disclosure saying, hey, don't worry, we're looking into this type of stuff and we're going to do it. We are most definitely going to do it. I know it sounds wild to you, but you're not thinking like us. You're not as enlightened as us, right? We're not really as woke as some of these scientists at the University of Tokyo. So I told you guys we were going to look over some of the articles that kind of indicated that this is stuff that they're already working on. As I said before, we have these on our website. A few things to look at. Humanzies, the push to make human-chimp hybrids. And transhuman sheeple. Scientists create the first human sheep hybrids. This is by Mia DeGriff, or DeGroff, of Technocracy News. And I'll put this link in the description bar below. But basically, it says there are a few ethical and moral boundaries with technocrat scientists. There are very few. They do not care. They will do whatever they can because they can. The slippery slope of dangerous technology has already begun and will likely end very poorly for mankind. In any case, this could give a new meaning to the term sheeple. And this is something that we've gone over before, too. You know, really looking at what this means, why they're trying to modify us, why, you know, this works to their advantage to basically erode and destroy our DNA, to dehumanize us, and to basically, as the article here says, to give us a state, to put us in a state of disposition, to turn us into creatures, to turn us into goyim, to turn us into slaves, sheep, that they can kind of move around. This is why they consider us chattel. This is why they consider us to be slaves to them. Really. So as I said before, and we'll get into this, and then we'll take a break, and come back talking about some other things. But as I said before, a new four-stranded DNA structure has been discovered in living human cells. Now I find this fascinating because I look at the multidimensional human in so many different ways that when you throw things out like this, basically saying, hey, there's a new way to look at our DNA, to me, that makes me think, hey, there's a new way to discover how we interact with the world and the universe around us. So this is phenomenal. This is mind blowing to think about. And I'll get into some of this stuff because I can't get into all this article, but I put it up April 25th. It's from Collective Evolutions by Aaron Walia. It says that Francis Crick was an English scientist who was most noted for being a co-discoverer of the structure of the DNA molecule in 1953 alongside James D. Watson. In his book published in 1982, Life Itself, he argues that there is no possible way that the DNA molecule could have gotten its start here on Earth, and that it had to have come here from somewhere else. Within the mainstream scientific community, the generally accepted theory is that we are the result of a bunch of different molecules, quote, accidentally bumping into each other, creating life. However, according to Francis, we are the result of what is now known as directed panspermia. Crick and British chemist Leslie Orgel published their paper on it in the July of 1973. Their theory explains that organisms were deliberately transmitted to Earth by intelligent beings on other planets. We concluded that it is possible that life reached the Earth in this way, but that the scientific evidence is inadequate at the present time to say anything about the probability. We draw attention to the kinds of evidence that I might throw additional light on the topic. I thought that this was important to mention because we really don't know much about our DNA, and it's extremely mysterious, despite the fact that some scientists believe that we know most of it, of what there is to know. We probably haven't even scratched the surface with regards to discovery and human biology. If anything, we're just getting started. The most fascinating part to me regarding DNA is the ability of our own consciousness to affect it in several different ways. And I know I'm probably going to have a few people saying, oh, you can't activate your DNA. You can't mess with your DNA consciously. You're a slave to your DNA. Your DNA is not a slave to you. You can't affect that type of stuff. Well, I would tell you to go and do more research and really try to understand the dunamis of the human soul, the dunamis of our existence, the beauty of the multidimensional human that we truly are. But continuing on, it says there are portions of our DNA that are labeled as junk or simply perceived as useless. And personally, I feel like just because it's been considered junk, it's not junk. We just don't understand it yet. I mean, we're just discovering this, a new structure. Just because it's junk and we can't understand it doesn't mean that it doesn't have importance. But continuing on, it says, in fact, a large portion of it is perceived that way. But that's only because we haven't figured out the biological function that it serves. This does not mean that it serves no biological function like the new discovery mentioned below. Precisely. And this is what I mean by saying that when we're looking at this type of stuff, we have to understand that our DNA, where we're at, how we express our DNA, how we express light, how we express life, how we express being human, how we express living in eternity, being present in eternity. There's a lot of different things that come with that. And if we actually understood ourselves and our orientation, where we come from and the purpose, if anything, behind our DNA and behind certain parts of us, our biology, we could basically try to act as the optimal human. And we've talked about this as well. You know, things like the light body, things like Project Growth Lane, Project Center Lane, Project Sunstreak, you know, really looking into the extrasensory capabilities that we do have and how these are parts of humanity, but they have been systematically removed or undiscovered by us. It's crazy. It is crazy. But let me get into this. Perhaps our DNA is interdimensional, extraterrestrial. Perhaps there are dormant aspects within our DNA that allow us to access other realms. I could go on and on, but it's certainly interesting to contemplate. Now, a new DNA structure inside of humans has been identified, and it's called the I-motif. It resembles a twisted knot of DNA, instead of the well-known double helix structure that was first described by Crick and Watson. It's the first time that it's been observed in living cells, although scientists have long suspected its existence. It's an exciting theory, an exciting discovery, but just as so many others regarding our DNA, scientists aren't really sure how to identify what biological function it serves, but it must serve some purpose. Just because we lack the ability to identify it does not mean that it's not significant. Quote, when most of us think of DNA, we think of the double helix. This new research reminds us that totally different DNA structures exist and could well be important for ourselves. And this was said by Professor Daniel Christ to The Independent, a molecular biologist at the Garvan Institute of Medical Research. Garvan was the study's lead author, and Professor Marcel Dinger was the co-author. According to the Dinger, the I motif is a four-stranded knot of DNA. In the knot structure, the cytosine letters of the same strand of DNA bind to each other. So this is very different from a double helix. The findings of Professor Christ and his team were published in the scientific journal Nature Chemistry. There was also an interesting discovery published online in the same journal that discovered four-stranded DNA within human cells. They refer to these structures as G-quadruplexes because they form in regions of DNA that are full of guanine, one of the DNA molecules for building blocks, and the others are adenine, cytosine, and thymine. A hydrogen bond is responsible for holding the four guanines together. The four-stranded DNA usually presents itself right before cell division. The discovery was published online in Nature Chemistry, and you can take a look at it on the website there. The study was led by Shachner Balasubramanian at the University of Cambridge, UK. I hope I did not butch that. But let me bring it back to consciousness, because that's what I find interesting about this. And I'll wrap all this up and then we'll take a quick break. But let me bring it back to consciousness. The interesting thing about consciousness is its direct relationship with quantum physics. You know, looking at things such as the observer effect, looking at the experiments of Dr. Masaru Emoto, you know, where he's able to project his thoughts and emotions on the ice, and these are documented effects of change. So it's very interesting to see this type of stuff. All the founding fathers of quantum physics were deep into consciousness, and as both of the subjects go hand in hand, it seems that consciousness has a direct physical effect on our reality, which also includes our biology. Of course. Some below are the questions asked by Jim Al-Khalil, a British theoretical physicist, author, and broadcaster. He is the professor of theoretical physics and chair in the public engagements in science and research at the University of Surrey. Quote, how does a robin know how to fly south? The answer might be wider or might be weirder than you think. Quantum physics might be involved. Jim Al-Khalil rounds up the extremely new, extremely strange world of quantum biology, where something Einstein once said, where he called it spooky action at a distance, helps birds navigate, and quantum effects might explain the origin of life itself. It's clear that our consciousness plays a role when it comes to shaping our biology, and that it is even more clear by the demonstration of the placebo effect and the science that's emerging regarding the mind-body connection. I believe it's important to mention these, as we really have no idea who we are, where we come from, and what we are capable of. Our DNA is a huge mystery, and despite the fact that we've discovered so much about it, the large majority of the discovery still remains to be seen. Perhaps there is information encoded within our DNA that paints a completely separate story apart from the two dominating theories, evolution and God. Personally, I believe there is an undiscovered spiritual aspect to our DNA that connects us to something we have yet to identify. And I believe it also connects us to life forms that probably span multiple universes as well as dimensions. And Aaron Walia of Collective Evolution, I could not agree any more. These are the types of questions we really need to be asking. So whenever these people are trying to come out of the woodwork talking about transforming us into a more optimal human being through science and technology, well, hold on now. We don't really even understand ourselves as it stands. So whenever we start putting in all kinds of implants, all kinds of different things to modify our existence and our behavior, we don't really know the kinds of damages that we're creating. This doesn't affect us. This not only affects us in the present time, but this also affects our children and their children epigenetically. There are so many mysteries when looking at what is happening to us that it is intellectually dishonest to not ask these types of questions. And whenever these people, again, try to say that they know what is best for us and to use things like technology to enrich and enhance our lives, You've got to be very, very cautious of that. But we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about, again, some of this crazy technocracy, Facebook indoctrination. You know how apparently a remote mind control document was released. We'll get into that as well, because that ties into stuff like 5G. And again, how that's affecting our DNA and our orientation in the world. But we're going to get into that and more on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. This is Freedom Faction over here on Factions of Freedom. I'll talk to you soon. But before we get into everything, I'd like to continue on the trend of talking about DNA and what that means for us in the future.
For the last 10 months, Houston police are testing cutting-edge technology that could potentially get criminals off the streets faster.
It's a machine that runs DNA tests in 90 minutes. Normally, that takes days, weeks, even months in the lab.
But Stephanie Whitfield found out there is concern about how the new technology will be used.
When crime happens, the clock starts ticking. It's not just about finding the person responsible. Police have to prove it.
Rapid DNA is the future. When mathematicians stop using abacuses and start using calculators, it's that important to criminal justice.
Houston police launched a pilot program to try out rapid DNA technology last year. Here's how it works. Let's say detectives find a knife at a murder scene. They swab the knife and anyone who might be involved. Then the machine compares the samples, revealing whose DNA is on that weapon in under 2 hours.
For the last 10 months, Houston police...
Does it feel like Minority Report yet? Feel like you can't escape some of the crazy things they have in store for us? Well, I can tell you this. The only thing that we can do to try to fight this is really be aware of how many different things we're going to be up against. This type of onslaught It's not going to stop. And this is why looking at not only the information that we have to take a critical view of, but also the sociological and the psychological applications and ramifications of this that we have to really look at. Like when we're talking about leaving DNA all over the place, this is the future that they're trying to create for us. They're trying to say that we are, and you hear the argument already now, we're genetically predisposed to carrying out certain things like that. You know, you can look at things like 23andMe, Ancestry.com, and all these other places that are trying to get your DNA. They're trying to get your information. They're trying to get your genetics, because if they can get your genes, they can start to try to predict any mutations that'll take place. Kind of see what's going on with your lineage, and see, you know, whether or not you're going to be a threat. The point of all of this, this technocratic system that we find ourselves living in, is just that: more information. And if they can get your DNA, you know, your children will already be known before they're born. But let's take a listen to Sean Parker, the ex-founder of Facebook, talking about how the social media feedback, the social media validation feedback loop, and how this is playing a huge part in not only us giving over our information, but also indoctrinating us in how we're willingly buying into this system. But let's take a listen.
Thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, to really understand it. That thought process was all about, how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible? And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while, because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people.
Even Instagram is subject to this. This is, if anything, they're probably more subject to it than most, simply because of the fact that it's instantly there. But what we're talking about is indoctrination, how they are trying to consume your time and not really give you anything. I've talked about this time and time again, about how this little black box, you know, your laptop, your Xbox, your phone, iPhone, Android, it doesn't matter, PS4, computer, it doesn't matter. That little black box that you're talking in, that you're listening right now, that thing is going to absorb every and anything that you have to offer. Any and everything that is you, because it can't exist without you. It has no purpose without you. That's why it must consume you. Your time. That's why it has to take everything. It's the dopamine programming. They have exploited, like Sean Parker said, they've exploited human psychology to simply see that this is the way to trap them. And that's the whole point of social media, and that's the whole point of everything that we see now, is to get the entire world addicted to this type of technology. They used Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as basically the foundation for this global system that they're going to be creating. And if that doesn't scare you, well, give me one second. How does this sound? Members of Congress who questioned Mark Zuckerberg, you know, at that sham trial, right, where he was sitting on his big boy cushion, looking like a robot. Members of Congress who questioned Zuckerberg, they received $641,000 and $641,000 and $685,000. Wow. They got over $500,000 from Facebook. Totally botched that. Totally had a brain fart. I think it's just, you know, the realizing the fact that these people are literally getting money from some dude that they're questioning. The hypocrisy, just, it blows my mind. The literal that's all it is. It's political theater. You literally have the government, Congress, you have members of Congress literally chastising Zuckerberg for doing the very thing that Congress does. And then to have information like this come out where they're literally getting paid off, I mean, we all knew it. We all know. We all knew. There is nothing major here, but it's the fact that they have the gall to put it out there, that they can put on this dog and pony show to where they can say, hey, you know, I don't like what you're doing, but thanks for the money. Maybe you should, you know, ease up a little bit, but I'll make sure to cash that check immediately. What kind of world do we live in to where our morals can be bought and sold so freely? Let's move on, because I could tear into Mark Zuckerberg as I tore into Barbara Bush earlier this week. But let's move on to DARPA and Facebook teaming up to scan your brain and augment your reality. That's why that's Zuckerberg. He's just a face, just like Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and half of the other politicians and people that we see, you know, like Jeff Bezos of the Washington Post. You know, look at how much money he's accruing. He's basically part of the military-industrial complex, all these people. It's all, like George Carlin says, it's all one big club, and we're not in it. So Facebook teaming up with DARPA, that's nothing new. I think they talk about this in here. I think it might be Regina Dugan. Let me see if it's in here. Yep. Boom. Former DARPA executive Regina Dugan was recruited to head the project, as her experience with augmented reality and mental and nervous system manipulation has given her the perfect skill set to make this project a technological success. So you have the former DARPA executive Regina Dugan hopping out from DARPA saying, you know what, hey, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, it's not cutting it for me. The stuff they're doing over there, it's cool. It's great and all, you know, messing with mind control. But I want to go to Facebook. Now, what in God's name does that mean? What in God's name does it mean whenever people are literally leaving the military, leaving the government to go work for this shady corporation? Let's get into this article. I put this up April 23rd. It's from Waking Times. It's by Phil Schneider, a staff writer. It says that in light of the recent Cambridge Analytica data scandal, Facebook is quickly becoming one of the world's least trusted companies. A survey from the Poneman Institute, a research group focused on data privacy and information security, shows that the trust in Facebook has fallen 66% to where now only 28% of its users believe the company is, quote, committed to privacy. I could have told you that. Although many people are unaware what goes on behind the scenes at Facebook, social media is not their only business. As part of an ongoing research and development venture, a project called Building 8 was created to develop technology, quote, in the style of DARPA. And this is something that we've talked about before. Their sketchy Building 8, you know, building how they're making Facebook into DARPA. It's crazy. You know, it's crazy. You know, you got the Washington Post with Palantir. You have Facebook with DARPA. You have Google with all these people. It's just one big, just as they say, a swamp of just craziness going on. I don't even know how to describe it. But continuing on, it says former DARPA executive Regina Dugan was recruited to head the project, as her experience with augmented reality and mental and nervous system manipulation has given her the perfect skill set to make this project a technological success. Now, before I continue on, I think it's important that we look at how, again, we're talking about the technocratic infrastructure that's being built, but at the same time, how they're trying to manipulate and alter humanity. Now, the movie Ready Player One is coming out here shortly, or should be out, I'm not sure. But the premise behind that is how we are basically leaving the physical world to absorb ourselves, or, you know, go into the virtual reality world that's there. Basically, Facebook, but virtual reality. You know, Twitter, but virtual reality. They have haptic responsors. They have all kinds of different things to make you see, touch, hear, taste, and smell, feel everything that's there. This is all basically to augment you, to make you want to augment yourself, as we talked about at the start of the show, and to basically eventually get you to join the collective, join the Borg, transcend your humanity. And so when we're talking about things such as DARPA doing nervous system manipulation, teaming up with Facebook, I want you guys to also think about things such as Elon Musk's Neuralink and his neural lace, where he's basically trying to integrate with technology, integrating with the internet, using these types of things at his disposal. It's crazy. And they're doing this. They're unraveling this technology. That's the next step. Where we're going right now with technology, you know, you type on a keyboard, you touch stuff. That's very crude. That's very rudimentary. What they want to do now is literally embed the technology in us and take it in a completely different direction. But continuing on, let me look into this. It says DARPA, however, has come under scrutiny in the past for developing dangerous weaponized technologies like HELLIDs, or High Energy Liquid Laser Area Defense Systems, commonly known as the Death Ray. Dugan was also accused of ethics violation by the Department of Defense for offering government contracts to a company she founded called Red X Defense. Building 8 was created with four projects in mind, all centering around augmented reality and brain scanning technology. Mark Zuckerberg believes that within the next 10 years, we will begin to see a stronger link between Facebook and the mind. Quote, you're going to be able to capture a thought, what you're thinking or feeling in kind of its ideal and perfect form in your head and be able to share it with the world. This is still coming from that robot, Zuckerbot. Ultimately, Facebook intends on creating an entire augmented reality to overlay our day-to-day lives. He believes that with this new technology, common household equipment like TVs will become obsolete. Quote, in the future, you will be able to snap your fingers and pull out a photo and make it as big as you want. And with your AR glasses, you'll be able to show it to people and they'll be able to see it. As a matter of fact, when we get to this world, a lot of things that we think about as physical objects today, like a TV for displaying an image, will actually just be a $1 app in the AR app store. So it's going to take a long time to make this work. But this is the version and this is what we're trying to get to over the next 10 years. So you have Facebook working on, and just keep this in mind, they really want to augment reality. They really want you to love augmented reality. Don't worry about real world. Don't worry about everything else that's going on. They want you to be so absorbed in technology that the only thing that you can think about is how you can share all this stuff with your friends. They don't want you to really look at the implications of what this type of stuff means. But why is this crazy? $1 TV virtual app store payment stuff. Why is it crazy with DARPA trying to scan your brain and augment reality? Why is it wild to look at all of the different things that we see unfolding? Because what we're moving into, where we're finding ourselves, and I think this is where a lot of people are slowly starting to see where we're finding ourselves is in a hotbed of chaos. We're disassociating from reality. We don't know what's going on. Our reality is force-fed to us. Our opinions manufactured. But what we're really talking about is how they're controlling how we think, feel, and act, what we see, what we perceive. Which brings me to my next article, my next post from the Renegade Tribune, where they talked about why I'm concerned about Samsung hypnotizing people and erasing their memory. Now, when this came out a few weeks ago, I wasn't really sure what to do, because, you know, you see something like this, you think, good Lord, you know, is this too much? Are people having their memory erased? Is Samsung being able to hypnotize people? What in God's name is going on? Well, remember that we also had Samsung talking about a nervous manipulation system as well. There's a U.S. patent on it. I don't have it written down here for this episode, but you guys can definitely go look it up. Nervous system manipulation is very real. And I remember last year doing a quick minicast over this proposed bill called SB86, and the idea behind it is that they would delete your memory, that they would erase everything up until a certain point. My thoughts behind that is when you're erasing history, when you're erasing your memory, you're basically erasing parts of you. And I could I could get into the depths and the mechanics of it, the philosophy behind it, you know, how your successes and your failures have defined your personality. And so whenever you're deleting and erasing that, you're basically creating somebody anew. But let's look at it here for this particular post right here. What we're talking about still is things like remote mind control, augmenting reality and scanning your brain. And don't worry, you know, I want to get into this, and then we will definitely get into how they have released files detailing remote mind controlled and forced memory blanking. We'll get into that shortly, because it's true. You know, Homeland Security did release records on remote mind control, psychoelectronic warfare. I mean, what was going on in Cuba? It's crazy. But let me get into this, because it's important that we look at how these are all tied into one another. If this is your TV, if these are the devices that they put out there, that they have the capabilities to erase your memory with, to alter your reality with, to augment your reality with, we have to look at how what we're seeing as entertainment could really just be that, programming and indoctrination. But let me get into this. I put this up April 23rd. It's from the Renegade Tribune. It says, "Well, I'm concerned about Samsung hypnotizing people and erasing their memory." I won't get into all of it. Definitely make sure you guys go look at it on the website or on the page. But it says, Samsung's Swedish site recently revealed a new program that offers hypnosis so that you can erase your memories and rewatch your favorite shows for the first time. The program is called Unspoiled Me, and it is comprised of 23 minutes of swirling patterns, mesmerizing music, and a hypnotherapist directing your thoughts and attention in order to erase your memory. Now here's the kicker, and this is not a joke, this is totally real, and the implications of what this technology could really do are concerning. We can only hope that the people will not fall for this, and maybe TV shows are actually just not that important. We can only hope. This isn't something new, despite the fact that we don't hear much about it. The U.S. military was using hypnosis in the Vietnam War, erasing soldiers' memories and sending them back out to battle. We have to ask ourselves what kind of possible effects this could possibly have on our brain. Some of the terms and conditions stated on the website that must be consented to before the session begins includes the following. Quote, "Before starting the experience, I guarantee that I'm over 18 years old, fully mentally healthy, and not suffering from any neurological problems or epilepsy. If not, I guarantee that I will contact a doctor before I take part in the experience. If I suffer from abnormally low blood pressure, I will also consult with a doctor before taking part of the experience. I am aware that the experience, self-hypnosis, could have real effects, and I'm prepared to forget the whole parts or parts of my favorite TV series. I ensure my sole purpose of using Unspoil Me is for its intended purpose, and I will therefore only think about a film or a clip TV series which I will have the possibility to forget. The suggested guidelines for the hypnosis session involve putting in headphones, isolating themselves in a tranquil place so that they can watch the whole video with no interruptions. The suggested one night's sleep is also recommended before they attempt to watch the show that is inevitably responsible for the whole deal." What we're talking about, and it goes on to really explain, you know, the mechanics behind it and how this is something that people are doing in the article. What we're talking about is how people are being conditioned. We're being programmed. We're being brainwashed. Right now, the very reality that we're talking about these types of things and trying to have an open discussion about these topics that are going on, you're able to program yourself. But whenever we're looking at things like your TV programming, you see it in ABC, Fox News, MSNBC, all of the other places that are putting out information, they're trying to control you as well. How do you escape from all of these overarching totalitarian systems that are literally trying to tell you what to think and how to feel and what to say, how to act? As Sean Parker said, we're being programmed. But let's get into this. Homeland Security releasing records on remote mind control. Why is this important? Oh, wow. How do you answer that? How does somebody answer that? You know, they already have voice-to-skull technology. That's why 5G is so dangerous. We're basically talking about silent weapons for quiet wars. We're talking about how they're using waves. They're using frequencies. They're using different types of technology, advanced technology that we... Well, not really advanced. technology that we consider advanced to basically attack the brain, to attack the person. Right here in this example for ELF brain stimulation, they say that 10 hertz is the bioelectric resonance frequency that they can affect the motor control cortex of the brain area. So if they have this little tower, and that's what you guys see right here on the graphic, is it's a cell phone tower. Go ahead and say ELF tower, Gwen tower, whichever one you want to choose. And you have individuals who are basically being beamed to. And they are being beamed different frequencies that range from 10 all the way up to 25 that can affect things such as your mind, your motor control cortex, your auditory cortex, your visual cortex, and your thought center. Okay? They are literally figuring out ways to alter your body movements using sound waves and frequencies. The human brain wave. It goes from things like delta to theta, alpha, beta, gamma, and mu. And this is why you hear me talk about things such as delta wave emitters, to where they can induce you into a sleep-like state, to where they can just shut you off. This is why, you know, some people listen to binaural beats. This is why some people listen to things right before they go to sleep, because it helps their brain focus. If we are living in a radioactive Wi-Fi, Bluetooth-induced soup with all kinds of cell phone grids and everything else in there, we're bound to intercept some signals. Except the difference is now, these types of documents that we're looking, that have been released due to a Freedom of Information Act request, we're talking about how they have actual technology that is designed to direct thoughts, feelings, emotions, and to shut down certain behavioral patterns. It's crazy. But let me get into this. I put this up April 19th. It's from your newswire. It says Homeland Security releases records on remote mind control. It says the United States Department of Homeland Security has accidentally, and I say that with inverted air quotes or with inverted commas, air quotes, released records on its remote mind control project as a part of a FOIA request on extremist groups. Washington State Fusion Center, a counterterrorism branch of DHS, released a file named EMFX on humanbody.zip. And in that zip file, there's all kinds of other stuff that you can see. But for this post, I just kind of put up a few of those diagrams, which outlines the effects of remote mind control on unsuspecting members of the public. Muckrock.com reports, as part of my ongoing project looking at Fusion Center's investigations into Antifa and various white supremacist groups, I filed a request with the WSFC. I got back many standard documents in response, including emails, intelligence briefings, and bulletins, reposts from other fusion centers, and then there was one titled EM Effects on Human Body.zip. I wonder what that could be. What does EM stand for, and what effects does it have to do on the body? EM stands for, you guessed it, electromagnetic. And what are you looking at? And what you're looking at here is psychoelectronic weapons that purportedly use electromagnetism to do a wide variety of horrible things to people, such as reading or writing your mind, causing intense pain, rigor mortis, or most heinous of all, itching. Now, to be clear, the presence of these records, which were not created at the Fusion Center and are not government documents, should not be seen as evidence that the DHS possesses these weapons, or even that such weapons devices actually exist, which is kind of unfortunate, because microwave hearing is pretty cool. It's a pretty cool line of technobabble to say out loud. And it goes on to basically just kind of talk about it, you know, brain mapping, psychoelectronic warfare, black helicopters, and things like this. But this is, and even though the article says this isn't true, or it says that this doesn't confirm it, I'll say that it does. I'll say this is a gradual disclosure of it coming out. I mean, they have a heart attack gun. You know, we've done shows. We've had people on where we've talked about Gwen towers, ground wave, emergency network towers, cell phone towers, ELF towers, extremely low frequency towers, and how all of these things definitely affect you. I mean, again, looking at things like 5G, we have to understand how potent that kind of stuff is. You see, so we're going to take a break, because we're going pretty deep into the rabbit hole. And when we come back, we're going to get even deeper. You know, I'm going to talk about how they have how we're having a literal debate, not only about precognition technology, but how it's a contest between psi powers, your psychokinetic and telepathic powers. You know, things like censorship's war against ideas, how they're trying to jail purveyors of what they consider fake news. This is the emergence of the thought police and how we're, again, losing touch with reality. We have so much more to go over with the time that we have left. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. I'll talk to you real soon. This is Freedom Faction over here on Factions of Freedom. Stay tuned. Last segment, wham blam, wham blam a damn. So, you know, we left off talking about remote mind control, silent weapons for quiet wars. What is going on? Can you tell me? Don't worry, because I don't know myself. I'm with you. I'm kind of learning as we go. I thought I knew, but apparently, you know, more stuff happens all the time, and I'm still learning. It's crazy. And it really makes you take a step back and say, wow, you know, we are really going headfirst right into all of this. We are definitely not slowing down. They have greased the tracks, and we are going that away. So let's look at this. I put this up April 24th. It's from Technocracy News. It's by M.G. Sigler. It says, Tech Mogul says people in big tech are losing touch with reality. And I think this is important to highlight, because what we're basically talking about at this point is how the people, the architects of what is considered our future, these technocrats, they have this idea of what the world should be. And so now they are collectively trying to have the internet, the real world, reflect the internet, and the internet reflect the real world. There's a crazy inversion going on, and it's becoming very difficult to kind of separate the two. So when you have technocrats who are not really aware of the common man's plight, they're just trying to do things for convenience sake, and we're constantly trying to update our values or download this week's new politically correct term, or be upset due to whatever has been injected into the social media network, whatever. That's not real life. And I've talked about this time and time again. What we have in front of us, what we're dealing with now, this technology does not enlighten us. It doesn't enrich our lives. It enslaves us. So when you have people who are enslaving us, and then also at the same time trying to disassociate us, we have a number of problems that I can't even begin to try to crunch down. But let me get into this. It says, this tech insider sees more clearly than most and concludes that, quote, the nerds have taken over the world. Now they're showing signs of being drunk on such power. The mind of a technocrat is typically aloof to the needs and the want of a real citizens in society. It goes on to say that there's something that has been in the back of my mind for some time now, and while it predates the Facebook fiasco, the situation certainly brings it to the forefront. Increasingly, it feels like people in our industry, the tech industry, are losing touch with reality. You can see it in the tweets. You can hear it at the tech conferences. Hell, you can hear it at most cafes in San Francisco on any given day. People, really smart people, saying some of the most vicious things. Words that, if they were able to take a step outside of their own head and hear, they'd be embarrassed by. Or, at least, these are the stances, thoughts, and ideas that people should be embarrassed by. But they're clearly not, because they keep saying them. This isn't about Facebook. Far from it. That's just the most high-profile and timely example of a company suffering from some of this. And in that case, it's really more of their response to the Cambridge Analytical situation rather than the situation itself. They don't know the right things to say because they don't know what to say, period, because they've slipped out of touch. But again, I feel like this is increasingly everywhere. I look around tech. It's an industry filled with some of the most brilliant people in the world, which makes it almost that much more disappointing. I won't name names or give examples, but I'm not an asshole. But I also don't have to. I'd wager everyone reading this will have a clear and obvious example of what I'm talking about in their own circles, even if their own virtual circles. This is everywhere. I don't know the cause of this, perhaps. We can blame part of it on Trump, even if I would blame it on Trump, even if only indirectly, a man who has gotten ahead of his life by saying asinine things. If I had to guess, I'd say that the root of this increasing sense of entitlement as the tech industry has grown into stature to become the most important from a fiscal perspective and arguably from a cultural perspective as well, the nerds have taken over the world, and now they're showing signs of being drunk on such power and speaking accordingly, offering up cringeworthy statements that only showcase a complete and utter lack of self-awareness. And that's what I mean by Mark Zuckerberg literally looking at like a robot whenever those members of Congress that are receiving that money, whenever they're asking him questions like, you know, what are you going to do to try to fix this? What are you going to do? And all he can give you is beep, boop, bop, 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 you know, I don't know what to say, but I will give you company line. You know, he's licking his lips. He's looking at you like, you know, like a weirdo, because these people have lost touch with reality. They're not actual humans. They don't have 9-to-5 jobs. They don't drink a beer with you. They consider themselves gods. They see themselves literally as the architects of our future. They feel like because they have this ability to rule over people, that they're going to exploit it. I mean, some of the stuff that was coming out whenever all this stuff really started getting exposed is the fact that these nerds, these people, these technocrats, these people were using this technology to get back at ex-girlfriends, ex-boyfriends, past lovers, people that they had financial gripes with. They abused it. I mean, look at what's going on within the police. You give somebody a little bit of power and they're going to abuse it. But whenever you give power to somebody that's been systemically put into a position of disadvantage, they're going to reciprocate that same kind of feeling to every other person out there who has ever made them feel inferior. That's what's happening right now. We have no idea where to go because we have all this technology and no wisdom. We have all these selfies and no self-knowledge. That's why this author, M.G. Sigler, is saying, you know, it's kind of disappointing that these very smart people don't really see what they're saying and what they're doing. Perfect example, myself, sometimes I have a problem saying very normal things to people in normal settings because I'm so absorbed in this kind of stuff. But I can only imagine how people like Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and all these other people are. They have money and they have power and they have influence. They are totally disconnected from people like ourselves. And so they're trying to push, they're trying to virtue signal and tell us how to act, how to feel, what to do, and how to carry out our lives, because they've never had that. There's no guidelines, there's no Facebook post, there's no website that's going to tell you how to live your life. And whenever they try to tell us how to do that and how to live in their 140 characters approved matrix, that's not real. But for the sake of time, I'm going to move on, because, you know, as important as this is, we have to look at some other things in relation to this. So yes, tech mogul saying that people in big tech are losing touch with reality is very true. Because you've got to ask yourself this, or at least this is the kind of stuff that I ask myself, you know, what is the point of all of this technology? Why are we like literally creating a prison to where we can know, feel, see, hear everything at all times? This is like a forced integration into the collective, into the technotronic collective. We're in this. That's the best way I can describe it. But what's the point? The real-time crime tracking, they want to know everything at all times. What else would an egomaniac, sociopathic, sycophantic, psychopathic dictator, ruler of the world want? They would want to know everything. A know-it-all wants to know it all. But let me get into this. Speaking of know-it-alls, precog crime fighting, the AI approach versus the Psy approach. And this is by Mysterious Universe. I put this up April 26. It's by Red Pill Junkie. But before I get into this, I wanted to kind of break it down real quick. You know, I came up with a chart where we kind of look at this. You know, what is pre-crime technology? What is precognition technology? You know, you have pre-crime technology, real-time crime, social media, pattern recognition code, and basically artificial intellect. And on the flip side, you have psi powers, which is your psychokinetic ability, telepathy, and things of this nature. We've talked about it before with things like Project Grill Flame, Project Centerland, and Project Sunstreak. You have things such as premonitions. This is why we've had Zach on to talk about these types of things. Your future sight, and being able to tap into that arc field. You also have things like the Schumann resonance, which is the heartbeat of the planet. I believe that they're trying to hijack it with things such as Gwyn Towers, ELF Towers, and cell phone towers. And a perfect comparison when looking at things like the pattern recognition code, we have psychic detectives, people who are able to tap into that auric field with their ESP, their extrasensory perceptions, and who are able to pick up on that kind of emotional discharge that psychic residue that's been left over in certain areas. So when we're talking about precognition or precognitive crime fighting, whether or not they're going to use artificial intelligence or if they're going to use the psi approach, it's very, very important that we list not only what technology can do, but what we can do as well. And I've talked about this time and time again. Technology is merely a manifestation of the abilities that we have had taken from us. But continuing in, let me get into this article. It says, do we live in dangerous times? Depends who you ask. To a neo-Hobbesian like Steve Pinker, we've never lived more safely in all of our human history. But survivors of mass shootings might beg to differ, though. One thing is for sure, and that is the approach that police work has radically changed in the last decades, thanks to modern technology. We have filled our streets with surveillance cameras, which will soon be enabled with facial recognition capabilities, and the DNA testing of evidence gathered at the crime scenes is even helping find culprits who might have walked free not too long ago. All of these tools are useful after a crime has been committed, but the ultimate holy grail of crime fighting is to prevent the act before it even happens. Sometimes that could be accomplished through clever investigations that prevent a plot involving several delinquents who have clumsily left a trail to follow, the kind of stuff that detective novels deal about. But would it be possible to actually predict a crime as in a real-life version of Minority Report? Earlier this month, an article written by John R. Quain for Digital Trends discussed the work of an Israeli tech company named Cortica, which recently partnered with the Indian company Best Group in order to analyze the terabytes of data streaming from CCTV cameras in public areas. Their goal is to improve the safety of public areas by preventing violent crimes such as sexual assault by way of looking at behavioral anomalies that would allegedly signal when someone is about to commit violence against another person. The software is based on the type of military and government security screening systems that try to identify terrorists by monitoring people in real life, looking for so-called micro-expressions, minuscule twitches or mannerisms that can belie a person's nefarious intentions. Such a telltale signs are so small that they can elude an experienced detective, but not the unblinking of an AI. There you have it. They're going to use AI to try to predict crime. I always thought that was such a crazy concept when I started looking into this. Like, what are you talking about? You're going to try to predict crime. You are crazy. What you're talking about is crazy. You know that? You are crazy. Predicting crime. What is this? Minority Report? Who can do that? Who can predict crime? Who can stop this? You know, and there wasn't a real answer. And as I said, paid attention to this, slowly started seeing how they're going to try and use technology and forms of crime fighting, it blew my mind. It really, really did. I remember talking about how robots gained visual foresight to where they were able to somehow, I guess, look at the steps that they were going to take as a computer program, and then, I guess, take those steps before that. It's crazy. It's crazy. The algorithms and things that are involved with this, but I want to play for you guys this quick clip from somebody else, actually, that's reposted one of my deleted posts. China is building a huge facial recognition database to identify any citizen within 3 seconds. Let's take a listen. Oh. There's no audio. No, it's not science fiction. It's not science fiction. This is real world facial recognition. It's used to help identify lost people, or so they say. We think running this facial recognition technology has reduced the time needed to do searches, lightened the workload for our staff, and made our searches more efficient. If they cannot tell us who they are, then we compare their image with existing images in our system. So stop taking those selfies. Better get up off of Snapchat. Better get up off of the Snapchat. But another startling thing happened in China this week, which brings me to my point when looking at this overarching technocratic system and how dangerous it really is. A Chinese journalist has been banned from buying property under the new social credit score system. Let's take a listen.
Recently tried to book a flight. He was told he was banned from flying because he's on the list of untrustworthy people. Liu is a journalist who was ordered by a court to apologize for a series of tweets he wrote and was then told his apology was insincere. I can't buy property. My child can't go to private school, he says. You feel you're being controlled by the list all the time. And the list is now getting longer, as every Chinese citizen is being assigned a social credit score, a fluctuating rating based on a range of behaviors. It's believed that community service and buying Chinese-made products can raise your score. Fraud, tax evasion, and smoking in non-smoking areas can drop it. China's growing network of surveillance cameras makes all of this possible.
It can recognize more than 4,000 vehicles.
Xu Li is the CEO of SenseTime, one of China's most successful artificial intelligence companies. It is Liu Hu recently tried to book a flight.
I really don't think like right now we understand like how sketchy that really is. That to me is frightening. You know, China is the model for what the New World Order is trying to do. They're trying to make a model citizen. They're trying to make a model technocratic state. They're trying to make a model, you name it. China is going off the deep end. And when looking at this, they're trying to get this whole system up to where everyone has their own social credit score by 2020. This is, again, talking about things like Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, and Agenda 2050. What they'll be doing when looking at it in that context with the agendas, they want to create a system to where they can identify you first. Then they want to be able to have a justification to killing you. And then by that time, you know, they want to already have a alternative plan as to why you needed to die in the first place. This system is totally anti-human. It's criminalizing behavior, it's criminalizing thought, it's attacking individuality and anything that doesn't necessarily go along with the collective. Even when looking at behavioral anomalies, as they've said, behavioral anomalies, mental schisms, thought police, you know, what is this? What kind of world are we literally creating to where, you know, you have cops running around with DNA scanners, and then you got cameras in the sky that are like literally watching you and saying, hey, this guy has this kind of social standing because of some stuff he said on Twitter last night. What is this, Kanye West? You know, this is insane. And I really think, again, we don't understand the implications of this, not only because it hasn't come to America, but because people don't want to think that this is possible. I'm not going to be here forever. They might come grab me up because, again, I'm not saying things that toe the party line. I'm not going to be a model Chinese citizen. This is why they're trying to crack down on dissent, silencing us now. This is why censorship is so important. I mean, look at what's going on in education. Look at what's going on in pop culture. Look at what's going on in society. It blows my mind. And we'll get into this here shortly because apparently, you know, Bill Gates is backing up another company that wants to have satellites all over the world. You know, this ties into him trying to create a smart city out there in Arizona. What all of this is again, that technocratic infrastructure that they're trying to create to where we don't really understand, to where we're just being shuffled around from objective to objective without any real understanding. And they're just controlling us. You see. Let's listen to this one more time, and then we'll move on to Bill Gates.
recently tried to book a flight. He was told he was banned from flying because he's on the list of untrustworthy people. Leo is a journalist who was ordered by a court to apologize for a series of tweets he wrote and was then told his apology was insincere. I can't buy property. My child can't go to private school, he says. You feel you're being controlled by the list all the time. And the list is now getting longer, as every Chinese citizen is being assigned a social credit score, a fluctuating rating based on a range of behaviors. It's believed that community service and buying Chinese-made products can raise your score. Fraud, tax evasion, and smoking in non-smoking areas can drop it. China's growing network of surveillance cameras makes all of this possible.
It can recognize more than 4,000 vehicles.
Xu Li is the CEO of SenseTime, one of China's most successful artificial intelligence companies. It is. Leo Hu recently tried to book a flight. He was told he was banned from.
So I'm wondering, you know, when my social credit score will get lowered because of the type of stuff that we cover on the show and on the page. Will they jail me simply because I'm sharing this type of information? Because I want people to think for themselves. You know, this is a very real issue when really trying to look at some of this stuff. And again, I just think it's something that we don't quite grasp what's going on. Like we don't seem to really get how that's going to affect us. And what I mean by this is we're already doing self-censorship. We're already choosing what to say. We're cautious of how we're going to interact with people. And whenever you have stuff like this that's basically socially engineering people to think and act a certain way so that they can get the benefits, you're going to have a whole bunch of plastic people walking around that don't really have an understanding of how they're being controlled, indoctrinated, and engineered. But as I said before, you know, Bill Gates is working on getting some Big Brother-esque style satellites up. But I want to play for you guys a clip put up March 6th from Activist Post where police are creating a national surveillance network using ComTech, Project Greenlight, and more. This ties into the smart city projects and things such as Bill Gates' satellite usage as well. So let's get that up for you.
Shooting in Florida, many local law enforcement officials are reviewing their safety measures if faced with the same situation.
Yeah, the Macomb County Communications and Technology Center has the ability to access cameras in schools. The Now Detroit Sama Chaudhry shows us how ComTech can become a hub for police during an active shooter situation.
Even when something's going to happen, it's going to happen. The question becomes, how do you react to it?
That's what many law enforcement officials are asking themselves after the Parkland school shooting. Macomb County's Communications and Technology Center, known as ComTech, has a wall of screens monitoring DOT cameras. But it can also sync up in real time with public school cameras, helping police respond during crucial moments.
Giving access to law enforcement from the schools to see things that are happening inside a school real time, if and when there's an active shooter. Wow, what an incredible advantage.
There are 54 monitors on the wall. In the case of a school shooting, cameras can follow the shooter through the hallways. Now, if the gunman leaves school...
This week's school shooting in Florida, many local law...
So I think, you know, whenever these types of things are happening, we really don't think all the way through. We just kind of... We react. But, you know, with the school shootings and more of these attacks that are going to happen, the whole point of them is to introduce the surveillance state and the police state, which is basically just that, the technocracy, where they will just, you know, where they'll have metal detectors in school, to where they'll arm up teachers, they'll arm up school resource officers, they'll do all kinds of different things. They'll turn the schools into prisons before they fix things, and that's crazy. But this is, again, to collect more data and to have that subtle behind-the-scenes kind of control over things. But right here, smart city projects are really police cam share programs in disguise, precisely. So whenever you have things like that, Project Greenlight, where they're out there trying to put cameras everywhere saying, oh, well, we just want to keep you safe, it's so that they can have just that access to all of your information. It's not going to slow down. With where they're trying to take us, with what's going on, you know, they're going to try every kind of different way to have surveillance on us, to track our movements, to see where we're going, not only in the real world, but in the digital world. They want to be able to have so much control over our lives that it seems like it's almost impossible. And that's why the times that we live in right now, the freedoms that we have right now, they're going to be things, the stuff of legends in the future, if these people have, if they have the future that they want, if they create the future that they want. This is that's why all this stuff is so imperative. Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, that's why you know these names, is because they are literally becoming the architects of our collective futures. They are trying to use their technocratic influence to have just that, to have these games of the elite. And because of where we're at in this position, in this time frame, it doesn't make sense, but we can start to see slowly these walls being built up around us. Like I said before, with China's social credit system, they're trying to have that ready by 2020. And if we don't start paying attention, we're going to be caught up in this matrix that they're building, caught with our pants down. We've got to start coming up with solutions. We have really got to start looking at what's happening to us and how if we continue to... I heard a phrase, a quote today. If you entertain the clown, you become part of the circus. If we entertain this, we become part of the problem. And their solution is to resolve our solution is to resolve their problem. They consider us an issue. If they can fix us, they have nothing to worry about. This is why they're trying to unleash the AI code onto us. This is why they're trying to have everything operating in a technocratic fashion, to where technology rules us, to where we are governed by machines. We are no longer thinking for ourselves. We're no longer thinking rationally and critically. We're abdicating our thought. We're giving it over. I mean, look at the recent fiasco with Kanye West and Chance the Rapper, people who were literally saying, hey, I have my own thoughts. Sorry, I don't want to be, you know, labeled with this group. Sorry, I don't want to be identified as to whatever you want to identify me as. I can't just be an individual. We're really starting to move into a slippery slope of a future. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Makeshift Mankind, Technocratic Influences and Games of the Elite. However, that's all I really have for you guys. I know I kind of went all over the place, but I'm trying to get settled back into the saddle of things, trying to get back into the routine of things, and creating these kinds of shows is always going to be difficult. Stay tuned for more interviews with some of your favorite pages. We're going to have some new people on. We're always expanding. I think we may have momentarily bit off more than we could chew, trying to have 4 shows at once. But like I said, trying to get this machine running back in the direction that it needs to be is a little bit of a challenge. So I want to say thank you guys for tuning into this edition. I know it was kind of heavy, and I know it was kind of random. But if you have any questions, feel free to email me. I'll have it in the description bar below. And as always, guys, stay vigilant. Expose lies and share truth. This is Noise Era, Freedom Faction, out. I believe you'll become an exclusive member and support this organization. That's what I believe.